Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Cavs get the big win over the Thunder. The Cavs is good at 32-4 to talk about it. Our next guest hosts the Beyond the Arc podcast daily, live at noon Eastern on YouTube, wherever you get your podcast as well. That's where you can find it. The great Bill Ryder, now on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Bill, how it goes, bud?
What up? It goes well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, it's great to have you here. I am curious, just I know you watched the Cavs Thunder last night. What were your takeaways from the game?
Oh my God! Well, I have. First of all, game of the year on paper, game of the year in practice, and I think the overarching takeaway. And I'll be very curious whether the two of you, the fans there, are skeptical on this. I think it proves that they're the best team in the NBA. I mean, we're almost halfway through the regular season. I know you have to prove it in the playoffs, and that's a different thing, and maybe an interesting conversation for Donovan Mitchell and other guys. But right now, at this point, what we can assess. Cleveland Cavaliers are the best team in the league. They're one of the best teams at this point in a regular season we've ever seen, and I would love for the many GMs I talk to anonymously out there to start giving them a little bit more respect than they have up until yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, Bill, I think we all can agree about them being the best regular season NBA team, but we do wonder about the postseason. And I don't know if Cavs fans have just been burned over the past couple of years, but I would say a lot of Cavs fans are ready to dive into the idea that they can beat Boston. Are you there, that this Cavs team can beat what is a great Boston team?
Yeah, I am. Look, the Boston thing is really interesting, and I think it's interesting even beyond what they were last year, because their philosophy this season is to shoot the most three-point shots per game in the history of the league. And I think if you're just talking in the vacuum about how you beat the Celtics, there's this really interesting reality of variance in terms of they're going to take 40 or more three-point shots. They're going to take 50-some games. And there are going to be games where they don't make very many of them, and you're going to be able to beat them. And there are going to be games where they make too many of them, and you're going to be able to beat them. And so I think attacking the Celtics is really interesting because of that and some other things. But sort of that micro-reality aside, yeah, I'm in on the Cavs. Donovan Mitchell, and is he good enough in the playoffs, and can he handle the moment? That I think it's a very legitimate question, and he didn't play well last night. He did not shoot particularly well, and Cleveland still won a huge game against the best defense in the league, against in a matchup where the NBA was pumping this thing and pushing this thing and sending people notes about, like, wanted to make it a big deal. It felt big. To win that game, I think, says something, as much as you can judge it in January, about the Cavs' ability to handle pressure. So, yeah, well, all of that to say, yes, this is one of three teams that are easily, clearly legitimate NBA contenders this season.
Bill, looking to the Cavs-Celtics, because something you said I thought was interesting, the variance on their three-point shot. They're attempting 50 three-pointers a game this year. Which is pornographic, but the Cavs are still top five in three-point attempts as well this season at about 41 per game. I'm curious whether the fact both teams are so reliant on the three ball, whether that hurts the Cavs in that matchup, or whether just the extreme excessive rate that Chicago shoots at puts them on a different spectrum?
Yeah, I don't think that it hurts them. I mean, look, here's the thing that hurts them is that the Cavs don't defend the three-point shot particularly well. It depends on the day, right? But they're 21st or 22nd there in that matchup. My personal perspective, and I love the word pornographic because it is pornographic, what Joe Mazzulla is doing. We don't have a sample size because this has never been done. We just saw the Celtics win an NBA championship in statistically one of the most dominant runs, certainly one of the 10 most dominant runs in history. I don't know that you need to introduce this element of luck. I don't think you need to introduce, if you're Boston, this idea and element of if things go cold, and they do sometimes, you might give away a couple games in a series. You don't have to. So I think it benefits everybody. I think if Boston hunted for better shots from the three-point line rather than all the shots from the three-point line, they would be like the team last year that was really hard to just get a game off of in the playoffs. So, yeah, I think it benefits the Cavs and anybody else, because if you get lucky, if the variance goes your way, Cleveland may give you a game or two games in the playoffs because they just don't shoot well from the three-point line that night, and they're forcing it, and that means you only have to grind out a couple wins maybe or three wins against a really good basketball team.
At the end of last season, Bill, it felt like everyone was deciding, like, do we want to break up the front courts or do we want to break up the back courts? Are you breaking up? And yeah. That was the argument. And what's funny is that Kobe Altman decided he didn't want to do either. But everyone, every fan we talked to and every radio host in the city decided, like, what part they wanted to do. Were you a front court? Were you a back court guy? Which one do you want to do? How do we all get it so wrong in that this core four could work together and seems like it is working together?
Yeah, that reminds me. I need to text Kobe an apology. I thought they should break up both of them. I know, so that's why he's a GM and I write about it, I suppose. I mean, I think the answer is Kenny Atkinson, and get halfway through the season, but I have a ballot. He's my coach of the year, and if you could only put one name, it wouldn't even be a question, because especially on offense, what he's been able to do with Jared Allen and Evan Mobley not being problems when they play together, but being the opposite. And some of that is, I think they've utilized, obviously Allen's not a shooter, but when you get him near the rim, he's really, 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 really good. And Mobley's not Steph Curry, but he's improved in terms of his three-point shooting and even his handle. So that makes it a lot more, it makes it so those guys can play together and thrive together. And then you look at the backcourt and what they've done. Obviously it's been incredible. And this is a team that doesn't entirely rely on Donovan Mitchell to win big games. You saw that last night, which is why they have the best offense in the NBA. So for me, the difference is, there was just a vision in Kenny Atkinson and what he saw and what he's been able to scheme. And, you know, give some credit, he studied under Steve Kerr as an assistant coach, the last 2 or 3 years, and was with Ty Lue before that. So he learned some things or improved on some things from his time as a head coach in Brooklyn. And I think that's the answer. They got the right guy in who saw these pieces and said, I can make this work, and he has.
Bill, what can the NBA do, or is there anything the NBA can do to make games like last night more commonplace across the regular season?
It is such a great, it's the best question of the day in terms of what the NBA is thinking about. And if I had the answer, I would drive a really nice car and live in a big place in Manhattan, because I'd be working as the number two guy to Adam Silver, because that's what he wants to figure out. And you're right, it's not just like, how do you do it? Cleveland, and my wife's from Ohio, but Cleveland's not a major market, and Oklahoma City, I've lived there, is a tiny market. Not like this was New York, L.A. last night. It's just really, really, really good basketball. This is what Adam Silver would tell you, or the people who work for Adam Silver would tell you, is that last night's game and the energy around it and the excitement around it is the vision of Adam Silver, that you're basically going to create parity and the best organizations are going to rise up with how the CBA works and the second apron and all the things they've been doing. And this is the reality. I think the actual fact is, you have two historically great teams in terms of their starts. But whoever won last night was going to be on track, and the Thunder are just behind this, of a 73-win regular season. It isn't very often that two teams with two of the best starts in the century, 24, 25 years into that century, play each other almost halfway through a season and have barely lost any games and are on these crazy winning streaks. So I think in some ways it's a one-off, but the NBA would tell you this is what happens when you have a bunch of young talent flooding into the zone of the NBA. And you give other markets the chance who are well-run to build a success story without having to be on the coast.
Darius yesterday spent the day campaigning that this team has four All-Stars. He did it before the game on ESPN. He did it after the game on ESPN. Realistically, how many of these Cavs players make the All-Star team?
Yeah, I better figure that out because I'm one of the media members who vote for that thing too. There are four guys where you can make a really strong case. Look, Donovan Mitchell's an all-star for me. Evan Mobley is probably, he might be defensive player of the year, but if he's not, right, he's going to finish second to Victor Wembanyama probably. So those two, I think those, I value defense incredibly. So it's two or three, right? Because Garland, I think, is an all-star. I'm not even sure there's a debate there, just in terms of his competition in the Eastern Conference. It's probably two or three, but I love and respect why that dude says four. And there are all-stars, and there are guys who are all-star adjacent, where you could kind of make the case, and there's not a wrong answer, even though you have to leave some people off those lists, whether you're a voter or your media member or whoever you are. And Cleveland's got a few of those too.
Bill Ryder, host of the daily podcast Beyond the Arc, which is live at noon Eastern on YouTube. You can also find it wherever you get your podcast in the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So if we throw Kenny Atkinson into this equation as well, plus the roster itself, and hell, throw Kobe in there as well, who is the Cavs' MVP?
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
P so far this season.
Ooh, that's sorry, Kobe, if you're listening. I know Kobe hired Kenny Atkinson, and it's Kenny Atkinson for me. I mean, just into our earlier conversation, which was also a really great question. You found a way to make the backcourt be a strength, and I think for me, more importantly, you found a way to make the frontcourt and make Allen and Mobley in particular as a tandem players that can play together and play on the same roster, and you can have the best offense in the NBA with those two guys. And obviously, defensively, you have so much rim protection and so much help there too. I think it's Atkinson, and I think there's a lot of guys we can praise. Kenny Atkinson is one of the, if you were to extend that question to the whole NBA, right, just MVPs of the NBA beyond just players, Kenny Atkinson is pretty high for me on that list.
What's the ceiling for Evan Mobley to you?
You know how people always want to be right and they hold on to it? I've believed in Evan Mobley for way too long. So I think he can be the best, or because of this incredibly talented freak of nature in Victor Wembanyama, you know, one of the best defensive players in the league for a long time. He can be in Cleveland, it's fourth best offensive weapon, but I think he can be a serious offensive weapon. He's never going to be a top 10 player in the NBA, but a guy that is, you know, in the top, I do these lists every year, top 20 or top 25, who's a defensive stalwart and who is on both sides of the floor a difference maker, the kind of guy that if he's your fourth best player, your third best player, you're in really good shape to be a contender. That is who he can be, and it's what he is this year. And I think there's still a ceiling that he can get to. I think what we've seen this season is the beginning of him reaching his heights.
Bill, do the Cavs have anything left to prove in the regular season with roughly 46 games to go?
No, I mean, just hold off Boston, right? I mean, we have seen teams be really good into January and have the wheels come off, and that's usually injury, knock on wood. That happened to the Pelicans a couple years ago when Zion got hurt, and we've seen teams be really mediocre heading into January and then turn it around. I mean, see the Cavs, LeBron's first year back under David Blatt, when they were at or just under .500, they let LeBron play point forward starting mid-January. So it's a big sample size. Things can turn, and it does get harder, disease of more Pat Riley talked about, to maintain the level when people suddenly start giving you their best shot every single night. So you just hold on to what you're doing. But the fact they beat the Thunder last night, to me, speaks to the reality they're probably going to be able to handle being now labeled, for me, it's the best team in the NBA, but one of the best teams in the NBA. But the answer is just keep on keeping on and don't let go of whatever you've been doing to get to the level you've gotten to.
Bill, since the Donovan trade, Kobe really has not made any foundational moves. There's been good moves, you know, the Strus signing. There have been some moves, but really, I mean, since Donovan, that's been it. Should the Cavs view their 32-4 start as validation that they don't need to change the roster at all before the playoffs this year? Or is it actually a sign to make a move because you've got a damn good team and maybe better than they expected?
So I'm a big believer in giving things time to bake, and I'm going to praise somebody that I never praise, and I'm going to. Like, give credit to Dan Gilbert, too. I mean, just the patience to let Kobe Altman see this thing through and to say, okay, maybe it hasn't worked, but maybe it can. I don't think you need to make big, substantial moves. Now, I don't cover that team every day, So I'm going to guess here, and you guys will know better than me, but I do know, having covered the NBA and been a beat person in the past, chemistry matters, the locker room matters, guys liking each other matters. And it doesn't always matter in the regular season. It absolutely does in the playoffs. See a bunch of Chris Paul teams that have fallen apart in the postseason. Get my CP3 shot of the day. And so if these guys like each other and it's harmonious, and it sounds like it is from a distance, then adding someone becomes less important, or at least it's more important to make sure who you're bringing doesn't disrupt that. So, no, I think they've let this thing cook. They've let this thing bake. They've made some supplemental pieces. Most teams, especially if you don't have a LeBron James or a Steph Curry, and even Steph needed this, need years and years. See the Boston Celtics last year. It took a long time to win a title to sort of move their way up the ladder. I don't think big changes are needed, and I think this Cavs team has been given the rarest thing in sports, and that is time. And at this point, now that it's working, I wouldn't mess with it too much.
Bill, we talked about the Celtics. Anybody else in the East that you feel like the Cavs should be fearful of?
Yeah, the Boston Celtics. I mean, other than the Celtics. I mean, so like, no. I I'm not sure. The Knicks might be a yes. Their defense before this little sort of lull was, for a month, going back to mid-December to just a week ago, was top four, which hadn't been true even when they'd been playing well. And their offense had been great, and Cat obviously has been integrated really well. I'm sort of skeptical the defense is going to maintain itself. I'm a little Carl Anthony Towns agnostic when it comes to the postseason, as some people are on Donovan Mitchell. And their head coach, even though they're only 48-minute games, wants to play all the starters 48 minutes and then like make them play five-minute scrimmages or something afterwards. And I do worry he's just going to grind down those guys into little nubs by the end of the thing. So maybe the Knicks, the Miami Heat, I've talked to sources there. You can laugh, but I'm not saying it's my opinion. They think they're a contender. They think they can beat Boston or Cleveland. I don't think that, especially the Jimmy Butler drama. But the answer is no. I mean, maybe if Orlando gets right, I don't think they score enough points. You got to be top 10 in offensive and defensive rating to actually make a run to the finals. Cleveland does that. Boston does that. Nobody else in the East does that. I don't believe in the Milwaukee Bucks. They're too inconsistent. I don't think Doc Rivers is a proven winner, despite what he did in Boston a million years ago. So all that to say, no, I think it's a two-horse race in the Eastern Conference. Maybe the Knicks, but I'm not sold yet.
Bill, great stuff as always, buddy. Always great to hear your voice. Keep killing it. Love the Beyond the Arc podcast, obviously. JP and I are both on weekends on Affinity Sports Network, so we catch writer than you whenever we can as well. Keep killing it, buddy.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate you.
Thank you so much. Bill Ryder there. Beyond the Arc, live at noon Eastern. It's a daily podcast on YouTube. You can also check it out wherever you get your podcasts. Bill joining us there on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. And great stuff from Bill. And this is the kind of thing you say when you're 32-4 like the Cavs are. 92.3 The Fan.